welcome. It's a special edition of Issues and Ideas. I'm Larry Rutter, your host for this hour-long excursion into the subtleties of the ballot that you'll be considering between now and November 6th. Well, at the top of the ballot, of course, is the choice for president, then the choice for the U.S. Senate, House of Representatives, local government offices and issues, all pretty straightforward. Then things will get interesting, maybe a little complicated. You'll be asked to vote up or down 11 ballot propositions. 11. And in this hour, we're going to try to get a handle on those propositions and give you, the listener, a chance to chime in. Which ones do you favor? Why? Which do you oppose? Why? Which don't you fully understand? Which do you think is the most important one that we should be considering? Here's a phone number. You might want to write it down. We'll be going to the phones in a little bit, but the phone number is 781-3875. 781-3875, area 805. And to help us in this hour of our need, we're blessed with a couple of resources. First, we have the reporting and analysis of the California Report, who regular listeners at 6:50 in the morning and 4:30 on Friday afternoons will know about, and they'll be looking into each one of the propositions, and they have been for the last week or so. We'll get their analysis of a few of the key propositions. We also have a resource person here with us in the studio. She's Vera Wallen. She's head of voter services of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. Vera, welcome to the KCBX studios.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I look forward to this.
All right. This will be fun. Mm-hmm. 11 propositions, topics ranging from two different schemes to increase taxes, reform the state budget process, require genetic labeling of foods, revise regulations on automobile insurance, change the three strikes law, doing away with the death penalty, increasing taxes paid by out-of-state businesses, reducing human trafficking, and preserving the current state Senate districts. Billions of dollars are at stake, as well as thousands and perhaps millions of people affected. To give you an idea of the complexity of these 11 measures, the official voter information guide is 144 tightly packed pages long. It's huge. Of greater concern to me, at least, is that six of the 11 propositions are either initiated by or funded by one or a handful of very wealthy people. And in fact, in this morning's New York Times, four of the propositions, and I'm quoting now from the Times, are initiatives of single rich individuals, while others are being challenged by equally wealthy critics pouring in millions of dollars to defeat them. A sign in this era of super PACs and Citizens United of the increasingly sophisticated use of the populist tool by the wealthy to influence politics in the nation's most populous state. That's from this morning's New York Times. The four propositions cited in the Times article are the ones for automobile insurance, 33, human traffic, 35, the alternative tax measure, 38, and taxes on multi-state businesses, 39. So, the propositions, if approved, can have an enormous impact on our lives, yet they are extremely detailed and complicated, and a majority are the product of wealthy special interests. I guess that's why I find the propositions kind of overwhelming, personally. Plus, in addition, in the back of my mind is the law of unintended consequences, and there's that venerable quote from H.L. Mencken, "For every problem, there is a solution that is simple, clean, and wrong." Well, that's off my chest. Now we're going to get to the details. Vera Wallen of the League of Women Voters, you've done this before on other ballots filled with propositions, a large number of propositions. Is this really any more complicated or difficult to explain, these 11, compared to previous elections?
Well, I remember the time we had 18. And those were, each one of them, completely different and very, very complicated. So that was a very difficult period of time. But these cover a wide range of topics, as you pointed out. And people have to do a lot of thinking about them. They need to balance it out. Look at the funding sources, look at the intentions, look at the sponsors and the opponents. And they've got to think.
Yeah. Which of the 11 propositions from you put on a lot of sessions on these and talk to a lot of people about, which of them seems to be of the greatest interest?
First of all, the education ones, I would say 30 and 38. Mm-hmm. We've gotten a lot of questions about that. And then the other one that's had interest is the death penalty one. It's had reaction and input from people.
People on both sides of the issue excited and...
Yes. Yeah, I would say that. Or horrified, just to be talking about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which of the propositions do you think is the most misunderstood?
Wow, that's a hard one. That's a hard question. Well, I think, you know, the difference between the two education ones, 30 and 38, and questions like, well, gee, they both sound good. They're for schools. You know, let's vote for them both, and sort of figuring that part out and what to do. Mm-hmm. The league sort of gave us some information about that, what would happen if they both passed, for example. And the other one that seemed complicated to people was the three strikes one, because that whole suddenly dealing with the details of a third strike that's not as serious a crime as the first two, that seemed to puzzle people some.
But like 31, the state budget process, not a lot about that?
Actually, no. Although we point out some aspects of it as we do our presentation. And that one is one that our view is very complicated and involved. And we have a tendency to want people to be very cautious when it's complicated and not something they can easily grasp for voting a yes or a no on.
Uh-huh. We're talking with Vera Wallen, who's with the League of Women Voters. So let's delve into these 11 pieces of legislation. We're going to focus much of our attention on Proposition 30 and 38, which you just mentioned as being a source of a lot of questions and whatnot. 37, the genetic food labeling measure. 31, the reform of the state's budget process, and 32, dealing with the use of union dues for political campaigns. But we're going to, if time permits, we're going to deal with all of them on the issue. And again, if you want to chime in, you can chime in at this phone number, 781-3875. And this is one, I think, that people will want to talk about. Two of the potentially greatest consequences are, as you suggested, Vera, 30 and 38. Both attempt to get at solving the state's fiscal crisis, especially as it affects our school. The first is largely identified with Governor Jerry Brown. And the latter, with a lawyer who has provided most of its funding. Her name is Molly Munger. So, let's start by getting the California Report's view of the two propositions. Again, if you have a position on these two measures and would like to talk about them, 781-3875. Here is the California Report.
Education advocates in California say public schools will either sink or swim based on the outcome of two competing tax initiatives on the November ballot, Proposition 30 and Proposition 38. While both aim to protect students from more devastating budget cuts, they go about it in very different ways. As part of our election 2012 coverage, the California Report's education reporter Anna Tintakalis takes a closer look at both initiatives.
To understand what's at stake for California public schools, I visited the headquarters of the largest district in the Golden State, Los Angeles Unified. LAUSD has had to cut about $500 million from its budget every year for the past 5 years. Class sizes have swelled, the school year was cut short, and teachers have lost jobs. The woman behind every difficult financial decision?
Megan Riley, and I'm the chief financial officer at Los Angeles Unified School District.
Riley's office is perched on the 26th floor of a skyscraper in downtown L.A., and though she has a sweeping view of the city, she can't take her eyes off a series of large monthly calendars on the wall. November 6th, Election Day, is circled, underlined, and highlighted.
I don't think you can not think about it. We're just in limbo because everything is critical about what's going to happen at the November election.
That's because if voters don't approve Prop 30 or Prop 38, LA Unified, along with most other districts in California, will be pushed further down the road toward insolvency.
I can't face basically counselor ratios going even higher. I can't face class sizes going even higher. You know, it's really hard for anyone to face a public saying, I'm going to have to take more away from the schools. I mean, there's nothing more to take.
Riley says Governor Jerry Brown's initiative, Prop 30, offers the most immediate relief. It would raise roughly $3 billion for public schools and community colleges by taxing the wealthiest Californians for 7 years. It would also increase the sales tax by a quarter cent, which everyone would have to pay. But if voters don't approve Prop 30, schools will get hit with a $6 billion spending cut halfway into this school year. Many districts would be forced to lop off 3 full weeks of instruction.
These are horrific cuts.
Dan Schnur is a political analyst at the University of Southern California. He says taxpayers may finally be ready to reach into their pockets for schools.
The biggest challenge for Governor Brown is convincing them that state government can be trusted to spend their tax dollars wisely and effectively.
That's because for the past 5 years, lawmakers have tapped into the state's special pot of education funding to balance the budget. The $3 billion raised annually by Prop 30 would go back into that pot, refilling it to the same level as before all the cuts. That would stabilize school funding and down the road even expand it. It would also free up existing general fund dollars for other needs, part of the governor's larger plan to fix the state's structural budget deficit. One person who doesn't trust the governor altogether is a woman by the name of
Molly Munger.
Molly Munger.
Molly Munger.
Munger's name has been splashed across the news because she's the wealthy civil rights attorney who's bankrolling Proposition 38, the competing education tax initiative. She believes Sacramento lawmakers have squandered education dollars. Here she is in a recent interview on an NBC affiliate.
What we find is that most of the voters really want to get serious about the schools. They are willing to pay the tax, but they insist, rightly, that the money not go to Sacramento mm-hmm. because they know that if it goes there, bad things will happen to
and
it.
People are suspicious of that.
They are.
Unlike the governor's initiative, Prop 38 would tax the income of almost every Californian for 12 years. Public schools could get as much as $10 billion the first year, which would be set apart from the state's general fund. Some of the money would go to preschool and paying down bond debt.
Hallelujah.
Scott Kaplan has 3 kids in Redondo Beach Public Schools, just north of Long Beach. He's backing Prop 38 because he says it gives communities a say in how to spend the extra money.
It's a huge amount of money for our District of 11 schools. What we could do with those funds at the local level and have our local school board managing that is phenomenal.
But the state's legislative analyst's office says there's more to Prop 38 than meets the eye. Because the money is earmarked for education, the initiative would do nothing to help California's overall budget deficit. It also comes with a myriad of funding rules that school administrators say would be difficult to navigate. And then there's the timing. The legislative analyst says Prop 38 tax dollars may not roll into schools until sometime next school year.
I can't wait for a great solution. We need help now.
Erica Jones teaches 3rd grade near Inglewood. She backs the governor's plan, Prop 30, because she doesn't want schools to get hit with that $6 billion spending cut should the initiative fail. And like many Californians, Jones feels the state's wealthiest should kick in more.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all about shared responsibility. But there's been a lot of responsibility put on the lower class and the middle class. So at this point, we're already struggling.
As is public education in California, which is why a growing number of parents and educators are urging a yes vote on both initiatives. But only one can win. That's because Prop 30 and Prop 38 would increase the income tax on Californians. The state's constitution views that as a conflict, so only the measure with the most votes can prevail. State taxpayer groups don't want either one to succeed. They believe giving more money to government simply encourages out-of-control spending. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis.
And this is Issues and Ideas on KCBX. My name is Larry Rutter. We are taking a look at the propositions that are facing us on the ballot. That was produced by the California Report. Incidentally, if you want even more detailed information, but nothing like the official voter pamphlet, you can go to our website, kcbx.org, and click on there. It'll take you to the California Report, and they have a very, very well done and easily to take in look at each one of those propositions. So that is propositions 30 and 38. Now, if you find that you want to chime in and you have your thoughts about proposition 30, 38, the problems of the schools, the state's budget process, now might be the time to do it. Our phone number is 781-3875. And as I said earlier, Vera Wallen of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County is with us here in the studio. Vera, you heard that analysis by the California Report. Anything you'd want to add or correct or emphasize that they didn't?
Well, I thought they did an excellent job of presenting the two parts of both, the two sides of both of them. Our league has also done a statewide very thorough study. So many of the points were brought out. The issue about what happens if both of them pass, I'm glad they brought that up because we are hearing people say the same thing that they were hearing, that, well, yes, they want the schools supported, so they want to vote for both of these. But it is possible that, according to the league's analysis, that courts may have to come in to determine what sections of the measures would actually take effect because both of them say, well, you know, if they both pass, da-da-da-da, and it's different for each of them and complicated. So it may. So that's one issue that, you know, it's often school people worry about, and they're just going to have to see. So, but it is hard to decide between the two, especially if you're supportive of the schools, which a lot of people are.
This is probably beyond your expertise, but I'm just wondering what – political agenda might Molly Munger and her people have that would undergird their attempt to have an alternative to the governor's tax measure?
Well, I'm not sure I could talk about a political motivation, but I do notice that in 38 they put quite a bit of emphasis or a secondary emphasis on preschool and education for the very young children, sort of increasing that program, which we don't have everywhere in the state and we don't have a thorough. So there's a belief system about that since they added that to the program. I can see that.
30 and 38, you know, if you read other things and lead to other stories about it, there's not a, I'd say, an overwhelming consensus around each one of the two propositions or even on the issue of should we increase taxes to fund the schools. In fact, as I recall, the latest field poll, which is of the end of September, said that the governor's measure had only a 51% majority, and 38, Ms. Munger's, was in the negative, less than a majority supported that. Now, that's already a couple of weeks ago, and those polls, they tend to change. But there doesn't seem to be a huge, an outpouring of support for either one or the two of them combined.
Well, and I think part of that may deal with the tax issue, because 30's tax solution focuses on what people, the majority of people, consider to be the wealthy people that whose taxable income is $250,000 and more a year, whereas 38 talks about most people would pay some increase in taxes in relationship to this measure if it passed and was fully implemented. And so that may be causing some people to have some thoughts about them. You know, people, we have a tendency as a as a people not to like our taxes going up. Yeah. But we support our schools, and we know where does that public school money come from? Taxes.
Yeah. So. And, of course, the governor's measure does have a quarter cent sales tax.
And that will affect everyone.
Yeah, I was trying to look up this number and I couldn't, but I wonder, and you know, if you have an income of, let's say, $30,000 a year, how much do you pay, how much retail sales do you do in a year, and what does a quarter cent really mean to you? It could be a couple hundred dollars easily, I would think.
Right. And for poverty people who have to shop and have to buy things, they will pay part of it that way. Yeah. Some people feel, as we've talked about it in different to different groups, some people feel positive about that, spreading it over everyone. And a quarter cent seems really small.
Yeah.
And we've had quarter cent increases for local things even.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's difficult to figure out.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, you want to chime in here, 781-3875 is the number to call. And you can chime in. We're talking about right now Proposition 30 and Proposition 38. Governor Brown's 30. Molly Munger's is 38. There isn't a lot of overwhelming support, according to the polls, the latest field polls. And I wonder if there aren't a lot of people out there quietly saying to themselves, they're both flawed measures. They're really both ways in which to get money, but neither of them are very perfect. And they don't solve the underlying problems we have in financing the state in the long term, because education isn't the only thing we spend on it. And I wonder if there aren't a lot of people out there that say, look, I'm going to vote against it because I think they ought to go back to the drawing boards and come up with something that makes a lot more sense. I wonder if that's on people's mind. I'm not going to ask you, Molly, because that's a kind of a political question, and you guys stay away from that. But that's one of the things that occurs to me on this measure. I think the other thing that occurs to me is that there's been a lot of talk lately about two things that have happened. One is the governor approving the high-speed rail system, the billions and billions of dollars to build a connection between L.A. and San Francisco that's going to take years and years to do, and billions of dollars. And then the other thing, which is relatively small in the scheme of things, but it's the discovery of all the money that was squirreled away by the Parks Department, several hundred thousand dollars, $100 million, sort of squirreled away. And there's a feeling, well, you know, that's just, those are the problems that need to be solved by the governor and the people. So we've got a lot of things on our plate here, and we're going to talk with Eric in San Luis Obispo. Eric, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Go ahead, Eric.
Yes. My question is, Prop 30 and Prop 38, each proposition needs a certain number of votes to pass. Is that correct?
50% plus one.
I'm sorry?
50% plus one vote.
Right. So it would make more sense to me that both of those propositions are sort of competing against each other. I'd be happy to see either one of those propositions pass.
Mm-hmm.
I think I prefer Proposition 30, but I think that, one is competing against the other. And I'm not saying that you have an answer, but it would seem to me that it would be better if there was just one of those two propositions on the ballot.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. Hey, Eric, why do you favor 30 over 38?
The money's going, it's going to the schools now.
Uh-huh.
It's a more direct fit. Oh, that might not be the best way to put it, but it's more direct to the schools.
Yeah.
And I think that it's better the way the quarter percent sales tax and the $250,000 income range, people are the ones that are going to take the heavy tax burden.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Well, Eric, hey, we want to thank you very much for giving us a call. Very interesting.
So, but my question is, what I'm not totally clear on, are they competing against each other?
Well, let's ask our expert from the League of Women Voters, Vera Wallen, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure they're competing against each other, but the fact of the matter is, and what we've been told and what's been said, is if both of them pass, they will look at who has the which one has the most yes votes. But where there might be a conflict in
So the one that gets the most yes votes, if they're both above 50%, the one that gets the most prevails.
However, there's an exception that could bring the courts into having to make decisions between them, because both measures have sections in there that say if that other measure passes X, Y, and Z, or if the other one says if that measure passes X, Y, and Z. And so a judge may have to figure that out. And so the league, as we studied this, we saw that as something that could happen. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, again, they'll be facing the situation that the people have spoken yes on both. I mean, if they both get 50%, that will be allowed talking to the legislature and to the whole budget process and the other concerns that people have. But there may be some details that have to be settled.
Would you think that to vote yes for both of them, is that sort of a conflict of interest?
No, they're each independent, and each voter, from the league's perspective, has the right to independently vote on each measure.
It sounds, Eric, like it would be a lot. The world would be a lot simpler if one measure passed and the other one didn't pass. And the simplest world would be when measure 30 passes and 38 does not pass. Because even if 38 passes and 30 passes, I mean, it doesn't pass, then all the spending cuts that were part of the current fiscal year budget will immediately take effect. And so any of the money from 38 would not affect that at all. The schools would take a huge hit this year.
Right. So it would make sense to me. I'm still not totally clear if it makes sense to vote yes for both of those measures.
Yes, it is something that you have to decide as a person, and it is difficult. Yeah. You're right, and that's part of voting.
We're not going to advise you on that, Eric, but you've gotten a lot of information, and hopefully it'll help you come to a decision. Thank you very much for calling. If you have a comment or question, 781-3875 is the number to call. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. My name is Larry Rutter, and we're going to delve into more of these as we go on in the time between now and 5 o'clock. I want to remind you that funds for this program are provided by Chaucer's Bookstore in Santa Barbara, hosting book signings from a wide variety of writers. For a complete schedule, the website is chaucersbooks.com. And funds are provided by the Chumash Casino in the Santa Ynez Valley. Now, the Chumash Casino offers 24-hour gaming and a luxury hotel and spa. Information available at chumashcasino.com. This is Issues and Ideas on KCBX. We'll be on the air for the next half hour or so. And coming up at the top of the hour is All Things Considered. Among other stories, they'll be talking about what a bad day Lance Armstrong is having. He lost high prestige sponsors and his position as head of the Livestrong Foundation. And all the details on that and a whole lot more coming up at 5 o'clock here on KCBX. As I said, this is Issues and Ideas. We're trying to come to grips with some of the issues on the ballot coming up. The voting will take place between now and November 6th. People are getting absentee ballots, and they will be filling those in. And we're going to talk with Dan on line one. Dan, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is Dan. I heard your comments earlier about the Proposition 30 and the quarter-cent tax. I just got my calculator, did a little math. If you, a person of 30,000, Ms. Dan, I heard your comments about the lower-income person with a $30,000 a year income having to pay an extra quarter cent from Proposition 30. Well, the math on that is only $75 if they spent all $30,000 and it was taxable. So for low-income people, the actual impact would be very insignificant.
That's a good point. I'm glad you have a better calculator than I do, Dan. That's very useful. Any other comments?
No, it's just good to validate or verify instead of just making assumptions, because it would give the impression $300 a year would be substantial, but when you're talking $30 a year, well, I think that isn't quite a concern.
All right, good. Thank you very much. That was very useful. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Yeah. And we're going to go to Nancy now. She's in SLO. Nancy, you're on the air.
Yes, I would like to comment that Proposition 30 is where I would put my mark. We need to support our local schools throughout the state. And I think the real question here is that if we don't support schools with this initiative, a fair initiative, we're going to have a scourge of privatization. And I don't think anybody wants to pay for that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling. If you have a comment, 781-3875 is the number to call. We're talking right now about Proposition 30 and 38, and we're going to talk about some others. Let's see. On line three is Jim from Paso Robles. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I really would support Prop 30, and I'm trying to support Prop 38. But I'm concerned that if in Prop 30 the taxes are raised, they're earmarked for schools, can those funds then be raided again by the California legislature and sent elsewhere?
Well, that's a good question. Vera, do you have a thought on that?
There is concern about that, but there is another measure that's going to talk about the whole issue of budgeting and the process for the state. These taxes that 30 has are temporary and they're balanced, but and there is some protection in there for school funding with this money. But again, your concern is well considered, because they do need to work on their budgeting process so that the borrowing that has happened from school funds doesn't happen again, because that'll put us back where we were.
Okay.
Where we are.
Right. It seems like this could be just an excuse to raise taxes, and they'll continue to be raided, and schools will be in trouble again.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim. We are going to move on. We have 11 propositions, and we only have two down. We may not get to all of them, but we're trying to get to the ones that are the most salient that have people in mind. This is Issues and Ideas. My name is Larry Rutter. Vera Walling from the League of Women Voters is here with me in the studio. Genetic food labeling, Proposition 37. The California report had some things to say about that.
One health-related ballot measure getting nationwide attention is Proposition 37, which goes to the heart of how much information consumers should have about their food. Prop 37 requires labeling on raw or processed food that's made from certain genetically engineered materials. It also prohibits calling any foods like that natural on the package. Supporters say consumers have a right to this information, but opponents say the measure is misleading and full of loopholes. Here to help us sort it out is KQED science reporter Amy Standen. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Scott.
Well, let's begin with sort of a background question. How are genetically engineered foods used right now? How prevalent are they?
Very prevalent. In fact, pretty much everything you'll find in that sort of middle of the supermarket, so that's everything from sodas to crackers to cereals to cookies, almost all of that contains genetically modified ingredients. And that's because most of the corn and the soy and a lot of the rice grown here in the States is made from these genetically engineered seeds.
So therefore, it sounds like if Prop 37 passes, that these labels that would be required would be on pretty much, I don't want to say everything, but like a lot of what we buy.
A lot of things. Yeah. And that's the main an argument you hear from the No on 37 camp, which is that unless manufacturers start buying from farmers who aren't using these seeds, they're going to have to suddenly start labeling pretty much everything that's out there.
And so what is the main argument on behalf of Prop 37 that they're making? Is it a right to know, basically?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the line you hear over and over again, that consumers have a right to know. They say GMO labeling is mandatory in Europe. It has been since 2003. And they also say that the FDA doesn't regulate this technology enough.
There have been a lot of ads on both sides on television. Let's hear just a little bit of the Yes on 37 ad, then we'll come back.
A new study links genetically engineered corn to tumors and organ damage. And the big agrochemical corporations also say BT toxins are safe for us to eat. We shouldn't be forced to gamble with the health of our families. We have the right to know what's in our food. Vote yes on Proposition 37.
So, Amy Standen, clearly there in that advertisement for Yes on 37, sort of a fear of the unknown. And is there a basis for that?
It is very hard to say in a blanket statement sort of way whether or not these products are safe or not. I mean, of course, it's worth noting that we Americans have been eating massive amounts of these products for decades. The scientific studies that we see done on these products tend to be on mice. They're very short term. They're very small. There's been very little there that's conclusive.
So one of the Yes on 37 ads links genetically modified foods to tumors.
Exactly.
Is that one of those studies you're talking about?
That's one of those studies. And actually, that highlights a big problem with this argument in general, which is that it's very hard to find science that didn't come from a side of this camp with a vested interest in a certain outcome. In that case, it was a well-known advocate or activist against genetically modified products. I mean, the point that I think really, you know, people should keep in mind here is that genetic engineering isn't an ingredient. It's not like saturated fat or MSG. It's a technology.
Well, and if you look at the campaign financing for this ballot measure, opponents of Prop 37 have vastly outraised proponents.
Yes.
Something like 9-1, and
yes.
Some very well-known food companies like Kraft and Heinz have given big bucks, along with biotech and chemical
mm-hmm.
companies like Dow, Monsanto, mm-hmm. DuPont. So what's at stake for them?
Their fear is that this is going to create a bias in the marketplace and that they're going to be scrambling for new suppliers, and it'll disrupt the market.
And, of course, what happens here in California could,
exactly.
could go
yeah,
east.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, of course. I mean, California is such a big market that it's just not worth it for manufacturers to produce two lines of products. So very likely, if you see the labeling here, if Prop 37 passes, this is going to become a national standard.
Well, there have been several ads for No on 37. Let's hear a bit of one of them right now.
Farmers already face a devastating drought, causing higher food prices. Now, California farmers are threatened by Prop 37, a complex bureaucratic food labeling proposition that would increase cost to food producers and consumers by billions of dollars.
One other part of this that opponents are complaining about is that it would allow consumers to sue companies that don't fully comply with these new regulations,
yes.
which, of course, would be a boon for lawyers.
Under Proposition 37, plaintiffs don't have to prove damages. Really, how would you prove that you have been damaged by a box of unlabeled GMO Triscuits, right? On the other hand, the opponents of this proposition really fear that we would see these lawsuits clogging up the courts, and that you would see small grocery store owners spending a lot of time and money defending themselves.
And no doubt we'll be seeing a lot more of all those ads and probably others between
oh, yes.
now and Election Day. Amy Standen, KQED science reporter, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Again, a report by the California Report. You want to check our website at kcbx.org for a guide to all the propositions from the California Report. The guide takes each proposition on the California ballot, pulls it apart to extract just the main points and arguments. And it's designed to give you what you need to be an informed voter in a portable and easy-to-read format. You can take the guide with you when you vote by downloading the printable version or by pulling it up on your mobile device. Find it at kcbx.org. Genetic food labeling is on the table, and we have Vera Wallen from the League of Women Voters with us. Vera, you have a comment.
Yes, there's also other information available for people if they're interested from the League. All of this study that we did on all 11 of the propositions is available on the League's website. It's www.lwvc, so League Women Voters California.org. Under voter information, there's an easy voter guide, and there is the pro and con document that will give information. Again, listening to the California reports, they have similar information, but if people want to see another way, the League materials often are available in public libraries, or, as I said, on the website.
Thank you, Vera. Let's go to the phone. We have Yolanda from Los Osos with us. Yolanda, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm definitely, just a minute, I have to mute my radio because they're overlapping. Okay. I'm definitely in favor of voting yes on Proposition 37, and I must admit to being influenced by my very capable and well-educated nutritionist who is has talked about how that technical process happens. They insert viruses and genes into food stuffs, and the and I disagree that we are talking only about a technical process. We're talking about a changed food stuff that just about everybody is consuming, mainly because so much of corn, it's like 94% of all corn, or is it 94% of all soy? Anyway, huge percentages of all the corn and soy that we consume is genetically modified. And I have read that there's been a study that some of this can possibly be one of the causes of obesity in our population. And my final argument is that more than 40 countries worldwide, including most of the European countries and China and India and Japan, require labels for genetically engineered foods. So I say vote yes.
All right. Yolanda, well, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. In fact, I'm sort of wondering whether or not except increasing the cost of food itself, whether there's any real cogent argument against it.
Well, the other one that we've heard is that it will increase unnecessary lawsuits, that it's going to be controversial and food companies will want to defend themselves and have a right to defend themselves, and so that there will be some costs associated with that.
All right.
And then the thing of food more expensive.
You're listening to an hour-long Issues and Ideas. We're dealing with the propositions on the ballot, 11 of them on the ballot. A lot of detail, a lot of head-scratching to be done between now and when you mark your ballot, and we hope to help you with that. My name is Larry Rutter on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. My guest in the studio is Vera Wallen of the San Luis Obispo County League of Women Voters, and we are plowing ahead here. I want to remind you that at the top of the hour, it's All Things Considered, and among the stories that they're dealing with is about a TV series that's a horror story that tries to deal with modern social issues. Go figure. That plus the latest political horror stories and otherwise coming up at 5 o'clock here on KCBX. Vera, let's deal with the death penalty. You said that that's probably causes more questions and more things than any that you've dealt with.
Yeah, we've done 9 presentations on pros and cons, and I was at one yesterday where, as I brought up the subject, the audience went, oh! And it just talking about it and made them, you know, gasp.
All right. What's the basic? What are they proposing?
It's the horror of the idea of the death penalty and of having to talk about it. I think that was their reaction. And so some of the information that they got about it that we provided for them to know, I mean, we changed our law back to include the death penalty in 78. And what the League's study shows that there's been 900 individuals that received death sentences since then. 14 of them have been executed. But we were told that one of those wasn't actually guilty afterwards, they found out. And so people have gone through that balancing of the issue. I do think a death penalty concept, just the idea of death for someone that we're going to kill someone, or that a person would be sentenced to death, changes the feelings. So the person who's being condemned changes their behavior, and then prisons have to treat them differently as a result because of that. And then I think people are just horrified by the idea, but at the same time, they see it as defensive of themselves. You know, it helps them, so, or protects them. So it's just heavy emotionally.
I've lost the pages on this, but my impression is that the law enforcement is not in favor, generally, of relieving the death penalty.
Right. Yes, that's what we've seen on the groups that are opposed to this. Several.
So this would basically eliminate the death penalty, but you could still have someone incarcerated for life with no hope of parole, is my understanding.
Yes, the concept is that what we currently would give the death penalty for instead would receive a sentence of life without the possibility of parole.
Mm-hmm. And that is a Proposition 34 on your ballot. Another proposition that is also fairly complex, and you get a lot of questions about, I understand, is 36, the three-strike initiative. We have a three-strike law, three felonies, and you're basically in jail for life, I guess, is the way it works. It's been on the books for, I would say, 10 or 15 years. That's my vague recollection of that. Now, my question is, what do they want to do with the three strikes law? They don't want to eliminate the law, though, do they?
No, they're wanting to look at the third felony that's committed and assess the seriousness of that felony, looking at felonies as a not so horrible to absolutely horrible. If it's an absolutely horrible third felony that they perform, they wouldn't, this law wouldn't change the sentencing for them. But if the third felony is a lower, less serious crime, in fact, I asked some questions about, okay, explain this to me. When someone tells me a felony that's a less serious crime, I'm horrified to start with, so it's hard to deal with. But what they're saying, and then I thought about this in terms of young people, because I worked with young people, if they perhaps learned through the experience of being imprisoned for felonies that they had committed, number one, they serve some time. Number two, they serve some time, so they're better. But they still do something, but it's not so horrible. Maybe it's not logical. I mean, the concept of this is it's not logical to say, therefore, this person is horrible, 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 and we have to, you know, lock them up forever. Perhaps they are improving. So that's part of the judgment call that's going on here, and it's just complicated and difficult to figure out.
Again, this is one that has a long list of law enforcement organizations that are utterly opposed to it.
Yes, it does.
And not a long list, as I recall, of those that are in support of it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, people say that it would better help the punishment better fit the crime, and it would save money and resources. But then those that are against Proposition 36 are concerned about releasing people from prison who are dangerous repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult.
Well, this is Issues and Ideas. I'm Larry Rutter. We're talking about the propositions on the ballot. And the next one we're going to deal with is Proposition 32. Proposition 32 prohibits unions and certain types of corporations from donating directly to political candidates and ballot measure campaigns. And the California Report had a report on same.
A number of propositions on the November ballot are drawing national attention and money. Take Proposition 32, a measure that targets political donations from unions. Rachel Dornhelm reports as part of our Election 2012 coverage.
I'm looking squarely at the Capitol building in Sacramento. The grass is manicured and green, the building sparkling white. But to Jake Suski, special interest money in politics keeps it anything but clean.
Lawmakers, particularly during legislative season, host just a number of fundraisers. I think on one day this August, they had 17 fundraisers in one day.
Suski is the spokesman for Proposition 32. We're across from the Capitol, in front of Chops, a well-known steakhouse where a lot of the earbending takes place. He says Prop 32 is a way to get that money out of politics.
Corporate lobbyists ask for their little pet project to be passed or tell them which bills they don't like, and union lobbyists do the same thing on their little pet projects.
Suski says 32 would accomplish its goal in three steps. One, banning unions and corporations from giving directly to politicians. Two, prohibiting government contractors from political giving. And number three, making it illegal to deduct money from paychecks to use in political campaigns. It's the last provision that has some people crying foul.
This is an anti-union bill, and they're trying to sell it as a keep the corporations out of Sacramento bill. So it's very deceptive, and it's really confusing our members.
That's SEIU member Harry Baker, who serves on his local's political committee. Baker says it's this last provision that completely skews things, banning paycheck withholdings or dues checkoff for political spending.
And that doesn't apply to corporations because corporations don't get their political money from dues checkoff of their employees. They get it from their profits.
There are a few instances of companies using paycheck withholdings to fund political action committees, or PACs. Still, the majority of corporate money used in politics comes from executives and company treasuries. Baker, who works for the city of San Francisco, says if 32 passes, he wouldn't be surprised to see a proposition next year to eliminate collective bargaining like in Wisconsin.
So this year they take away our political power. Next year they really put the bullet through our head and kill the unions.
Hi, may I speak with Patsy?
Because it threatens to cut off Labor's primary political fundraising source, unions are pulling out all the stops. They've put up over $40 million to fight 32. That's almost five times as much as the proponents. And they're calling members during evening phone banks, like this one, at the SEIU's Union Hall in San Francisco.
And the worst part about it is it sort of drowns out working class and middle class voices and replaces them with corporate special interests.
In fact, corporations don't seem too concerned about Prop 32's provision banning direct union and corporate giving. Most businesses aren't donating to fight it, and the State Chamber of Commerce is neutral on 32. Why? The elephant in the room, or to be fair, the elephant and the donkey in the room, is indirect political spending. 32 doesn't touch spending on California's initiative campaigns, and it doesn't touch independent expenditures by what are increasingly known as super PACs. Super PACs exploded onto the federal scene after the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision 2 years ago. This allows for unlimited political spending by groups independent of campaigns. So anyone that has the money can get their voice heard, even without giving directly to the campaign. In fact, the largest single expenditure for Prop 32, $4 million, is by a super PAC out of Iowa with ties to the conservative Koch brother billionaires. Yes on 32's spokesman Suski says he knew nothing about the support ahead of time, but that it is welcome in the face of so much special interest cash.
At the end of the day, the Supreme Court has decided to protect ballot spending and issue advocacy, and they also protect independent expenditures, whether they be from a corporation or a union. So there's always going to be that unlimited spending aspect on issue advocacy until the Supreme Court of the federal government changes that.
Eric McGee with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California says 32 just doesn't affect parties equally. For instance, wealthy individuals aren't touched by the law.
Corporations may be hampered some, but by and large, their status quo doesn't change a lot. But it does, I think, change the status quo for unions quite a bit because the deductions from paychecks is a very important way that unions raise money.
Those supporting the proposition include the state Republican Party, Democrats for Education Reform, and the state chapter of the National Federation of Independent Business. On the other side, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, and the state Democratic Party have come out against it. Many papers around the state have run editorials calling it deceptive. They're not necessarily endorsing the spending of organized labor, but they do say Prop 32 would create an uneven political playing field. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Dornhelm.
And that report by the California Report, you want to find out about all the ballot propositions. They have on their website taken an analysis of each one. And you go to it by going to kcbx.org, and it directs you right to the California Report's analysis of each one of the propositions. Vera Wallen, that discussion of 32, anything left out in your view?
No, they presented the pro side and the con side actually very well. And those are the things that the League, when they studied this proposition and tried to balance it out, they found the same thing.
Yeah.
And then you heard that our action side of the League, which I'm from voter service, so I don't usually deal with that, but they went even further in the study of it and actually came down on one side of this issue. So.
And it'll be a secret which side, at least.
Well, I won't say it.
Which side of the issue. This is Issues and Ideas that we have been looking at and continue to look at the various of the 11 propositions on the ballot that you can fill out now or wait till November 6th. Fill out now as absentee, I guess. Or I guess we haven't gotten our absentee ballots.
Yes, no, we did. They were mailed October 9th, and people received them starting the 10th. I've been hearing lots about it.
So people are already voting, I like going to the voting booth and actually doing it. And it happens to be end to end of my street, so it's real easy. But a lot of more and more people are doing just that. Well, we've talked about Proposition 30, 38, the two competing tax measures. We've talked about 32 unions and political campaigns. We've talked about the death penalty. We've talked about the three strikes. And we've talked about genetic food labeling. What we haven't talked about are some of the more complex, actually, arcane might be the word, measures on the ballot. One of them is the state budget process. It's a very long and very detailed. The California Report has done a terrific analysis of that. It'll make your head spin a little bit because it is quite complex. But that's one, that's 31 that people might want to take a look at. Of the other ones that we haven't dealt with, Vera Wallen, any in particular come to mind that we ought to deal with in the next couple minutes here?
Well, actually, of course, we always want to deal with all of them. But Proposition 40, which is looking at redistricting again, an interesting part for us as we studied that was that the people who were opposed to Proposition 40, who are the ones who actually did the initiative and put it forward, have now, because the Supreme Court has ruled on it, they have backed off of their opposition. And 40 is a referendum, which is actually confirming a previously passed initiative. So it would, carry forward with the district, with the lines drawing for the Senate district. It would be left alone, as we did.
Well, there's the automobile insurance reform, which is being funded by somebody in the insurance business.
Yes.
There's taxes on multi-state businesses, which has another very wealthy person supporting it. And there is the human trafficking initiative, which has a third very wealthy person supporting it, and we don't have the time to go into those. And we're basically through with our analysis of the propositions. There are 11 of them on the ballot. You go to kcbx.org, and you can get to the California Report, taking a look at all of them. I want to thank Vera for being with us today. Vera
and everybody has to vote, for sure. Be sure you vote.
All right. Vera is with the League of Women Voters. My name is Larry Rutter. I wish you a very pleasant day.